Welcome to the Two Girls with Grief book club. We might laugh and we might cry, but we always read.
This is a book club where we might make ourselves cry, but sometimes we also read books that are fun. So stay tuned.
Yeah, so we are reading chapters 6 through 15, a big chunk of the book of Crying in H Mart. And I picked this book because I thought it was such a great book to read in the midst of a lot of my grieving and felt very connected to the main character. And they dive into so many topics in her memoir. So I hope that you've been enjoying it so far, Rachel, considering it's your first time reading it.
I mean, obviously it's a memoir, so it is real. I have leaned towards more so fictional grief stories. So It's definitely weird to see so many parallels in her story.
Yeah.
In things that I've experienced. So that was definitely interesting to read and know that it actually happened and not just someone's like fictional storytelling abilities. So right, that definitely kind of adds a little bit more oomph to the story as you're reading it, because you're like, oh, this actually happened to somebody and this is a really hard, difficult experience and I relate to it so much. So yeah, definitely. She kind of dumped a lot of family trauma, different stuff in the chapters 1 through 5, but I was not prepared for chapters 6 through 15. I was not prepared. I was definitely not prepared for 6 through 15 for sure. I definitely was crying reading these chapters.
Yeah, they're not light by any means. And
no.
I think what is great about, I mean, not only her writing, which is so, I think, beautiful, but also straightforward. It's very easy to read. Is that she's taking you from like the beginning of the whole process to like not the end of the process, but all the way until after like the loss. And she's taking you through the whole different stages. And I appreciate that because I feel like a lot of books that I might be reading like in a nonfiction sense with grief, the loss has already happened and you're processing it. But in this case, she goes, I mean, there's so many chapters just about the caregiving of her mom. And you and I have talked a lot about that and that pre-grief stage of you're anticipating it,
yeah,
but you're not there yet.
Yeah. And I think it's so crazy because, yeah, I don't think people usually storytell the nitty-gritty, the very dark, deep parts of losing people and death and everything that happens, because usually on movies, not that they don't ever show the heart of it, but you can't show everything.
Yeah.
And even for movie purposes, they probably decide to leave a lot of things out, and it's just really so much worse to experience it and have someone detail it so well, where when you're experiencing it, I feel like it's a blur, right? So yeah, it's kind of like reliving it through her chapters. And I made a bunch of notes on different chapters, and starting off with chapter 6, I remember that's where she flew back to go visit her mom after she was sick. And I think she had done her first chemo treatment. And I remember it made me think about when I went to go see my mom for the first time after she had been receiving treatment. And I think her mom it sounded like at the time in a better state than my mom was, but like seeing my mom the way that she was shocking, like not at all prepared to see them like that. And I know for you, you were there the entire time. So kind of seeing that gradual for your dad, but just seeing your parent in that state is really hard. But what were your thoughts on that? Or are there any other things about chapter 6 that stood out to you?
Yeah, I think kind of her need to be that caregiving person to her mom. And obviously with the prior context of her relationship with her mom really adds up to like her wanting to be there so badly and be the person her mom depends on. And that was something I definitely related to, as being the primary decision maker for my dad's health, was you feel like you want to be in charge of everything because you think you could do a better job than anybody else. And so seeing that she's trying to be there, and you're watching the roles begin to reverse where, you know, her mother kind of took charge of everything and may have had a little bit of like some aspect of like maybe a little bit of some control issues. But now you're seeing that Michelle is entering that phase of having to make these decisions for her mom and be there and caregiving for her. And that is that's a very hard switch, I think, for people who are in that caregiving mode, especially for someone younger caregiving for somebody older, because that older person now has to depend on a younger person. And for some people, that's very hard to do, to be, I think, feel vulnerable enough and trust that the younger person is going to take care of them and love them through this and make the right decisions. So, yeah, that was one of those things where I was like, I felt a lot of relation to of the child kind of entering this parental role and the parent kind of becoming the child again.
It's really hard. It's definitely a challenge. And I don't think you really address it necessarily in the time. And it's like something when you step away, you realize, oh, how weird it is that our roles have reversed, like, completely. And yeah, definitely being like the baby of the family. So even with my sister and my parents, like, it you know, it's definitely role reversal. But yeah, I don't think people really acknowledge just kind of how hard that is for like your relationship to just completely change.
Yeah.
Out of there.
And I know she kind of hits on it later towards the end of the chapters that we read. But when her mom's older sister, her aunt, comes and visits them, and her trying to understand what her aunt must be going through to have, spoiler alert, to have lost two younger sisters, and think like that's just not how you expect life to turn out.
Yeah.
You expect the older person to leave first and then subsequently everybody thereafter. But in this case, it's not what happens in life.
Yeah. You expect there to be order. I think you go into life thinking that things are going to work out in a certain way. And when it doesn't, that's the really hard part. You have to, you know, you're figuring out something from scratch. It's really hard. And yeah, I think that's one of the things where we've talked about before, just like on regular podcasts, like episodes of just, you have to let go of how you thought life was going to be, because life can just throw you huge curveballs, and you have to go with it. You have to just kind of figure out what works in your life, because you can't control the things that happen sometimes. And that's really hard. But
yeah. And I think in chapter 7, that's when we begin to see the physical manifestation of cancer, of chemotherapy. And, you know, I think you see somebody sick and you're like, your mind is like, oh, well, they're going to get through it, because you've seen people sick before and you've seen people get better. But, you know, in the previous chapter, she's sick because she thinks she has a stomach digestion illness, but to find out it's not that at all. It's the cancer and it's the chemotherapy. And so now we're seeing like the physical effects of that. And honestly, one of the parts that break my heart is her mom trying to like process the loss of her hair, and kind of like, you know, we say vanity and we often say it in like a negative way, but in this case, it's like, you only know yourself and you only know your body that you've lived in. And to see that change so quickly, I think that'd be jarring for anybody.
Yeah.
And so I think of myself in that case of like, you know, if I was going through that, how would I handle losing my hair and like, you know, my skin looking different, and, you know, the things that you love to eat are now not tasting the same. And I think we're starting to see like the big parts of like the hard times of being sick with this disease.
Yeah. And I think it's weird, because I think so many people say, oh, it's just, people try to downplay when sickness takes physical tolls on people.
Yeah.
You know, like their hair falls out or they get skinny. Like, people always try to downplay that, but that is such a huge part of your mental health as well. Yeah. And I think people need to stop doing that. And I think it's trying to help. I think, you know, you're trying to tell someone, you're not validating someone's feelings that looks completely different than what they used to. And that is a hard part. That's something you have to accept, that's part of the process. You don't look the same. Mm-hmm. You don't feel the same. Because even when there's times that I've like, you know, through different grief periods where like I wasn't taking care of myself, I look in the mirror and I'm like, this isn't even who I feel like. You know, like, I don't feel like myself. I feel like a different version of myself. And I do think that like you know, getting ready at least somewhat, you know, for the day and stuff makes you feel better. That's a very basic level. So Imagine looking in the mirror and you've lost all your hair. You look gauntly, like your skin, like chemo can change your skin color. You know, there's so many different things that sickness does to your body. My sister had dealt with edema. Like she didn't, like, there's just so many things that, like, they just look different. Her medication made her puffy. Like there's so many different things like that. That people always try to say, look, at least you're alive or this, whatever. No, that's a hard part of it. That's a really hard part for it, you know, because even when you're healthy and, or, you know, not with sickness and you're letting yourself go in different ways, that's also part of your mental health that slips away, that you feel bad about. And you can't eat your favorite foods, like your stomach doesn't allow you to. I definitely experienced with my mom where she wasn't eating and it was so hard to figure out what to feed her and all the things she wanted to try. And that's hard because you just want to help. But then it just, like, doesn't work. Like, my mom would throw it up. Like, my mom had the same thing where, like, it basically, her body emptied it. Like, it was not great. And so I think when people get so, like, I think they're trying to help. And I think it's the same thing when people are, like, trying to fix your grief. Mm-hmm. They're trying to fix your sickness by being like, oh, you look great or whatever. It's like, just let someone feel bad about that they look different. Because, like, yes, you're strong, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you have to be, right? It's like, by default, you just have to be if you want to survive. And it's one, like, just let someone be sad that they don't look the same. Or that, you know, that they don't feel great about how they're looking right now. And, you know, reading about her mom crying in the mirror, seeing her, it's, my mom was, like, so stoic about it. And I think she was hiding those feelings from me. And it's, it made me think about that. And it's, but I know she must, my mom also liked looking nice. So it's, like, I'm sure that she felt that, you know. And I wish she had been able to verbalize it in that way. So it's, like, just let people, it's a hard thing. It's hard on everybody. Like, just let people feel those emotions, because that's such a hard thing to do. And yeah, there's another scene in there where she drives her mom to the hospital where she's, like, out of it. And that happened to my sister. And, like, I just remember that. I was like, that is, it brought up another memory of just, like, my sister being out of it and going to the hospital. And it's crazy because it's, like, you don't think about, like, how scary it is. I mean, her mom said, like, her mom was kind of, like, out of it. Like, she had to restrain her mom. That's not what happened. But to my sister, but it's crazy, just, like, so many similar kind of things happen where you're, like, rushing the hospital and it's hard. But these chapters make me cry a ton. So it, like, brings up stuff. And I remember in one of the next chapters, I think it was chapter 8, she had mentioned, she went back and forth, so this is why this is in the story, but she had mentioned something about being the only Korean girl in school. But she did experience, like, growing up in an area where she got made fun of for being the only Korean girl. I think she had mentioned some, like, pretty racist things people had said to her. And thankfully, like, my middle school wasn't bad like that. I feel like I grew up in a pretty diverse area, but there was a guy in my class that I remember, he specifically said to me one time, he was like, oh, I hate Asian people. And I was like, of all people to say that to. And we were, like, in sixth grade, maybe so, and I maybe even younger. And I was just like, I'm Asian. And he's like, oh, not you. I don't hate you. And I was just like, okay. Oh, and then I was like, well, what about my parents? And I was being like, what about my sister? Like, I didn't, to me, like, it was just such a foreign feeling. I couldn't understand it. And I just kept remember saying, like, what about this person? Like, I was just, like, naming off people. Because I'm like, why?
Yeah.
What's going, like, I totally didn't understand it. And just think of, like, 11-year-old is just saying, like, he hates Asian people. That happened, like, when I was 10, 11. Like, I still remember it because it was one of the first times I was like, that's weird. Like, what does that mean? And he, granted, he didn't think I was Asian for whatever reason. It wasn't actually, like, to him, it wasn't included in that. But it still is one of those things where it's like, why did you even think that? Like, who taught you that at 11 years old? And you're combining the whole Asian population into that? So it was something where I'm like, oh, I related to that in that one sense. Luckily, it wasn't at all as bad as things she mentioned in that book, in her book. But yeah, I remember that specifically. So it is crazy. He probably doesn't remember it. Like, I'm sure he doesn't remember saying that to me, but anytime I see him on like LinkedIn or anything, like that's the only thing I think of because we're not like good friends. I mean, I have a few other stories, but like that's the main thing that I remember of him. Like years later, it's like he said that to me.
Yeah. I mean, that goes to show how long lasting people's words can be, you know, like, an 11-year-old says something very hateful and off the cuff and doesn't think about their impact. But, you know, here you are in your 30s.
Yeah.
And this is something like still something that comes up for you.
Yeah. It's something just like it's a memory I have of him. And like if someone says like, what's the first experience of like racism you experience, like that's probably the first thing I think of.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably why I remember it. It's not something I'm like, I'm not like I'm still dealing with it or something, right. But it is something where if like someone asks me, that'll probably be the first thing memory I say. And it'll be funny because I'm sure he will have no idea that he said that. And I hope he's not like that as an adult.
Maybe me too. I hope he's changed and grown and better.
I definitely think people can change and grow. For sure. I think people need to chill on that because I think you can change so much, even in a year. I think you really can change. I think people can, there's always room for growth. And if people stop attacking people, like, it makes you not want to change. If someone's like saying that you're horrible, this and that, and it's like people make mistakes. No one is ever as good as they seem. So before you get on your high horse, take a look at what you can change about yourself before you attack somebody.
Yeah.
Especially that you don't know about what they did. And I hope he's better. Let's just say, like, he's a better person now because he was 11.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, like, another, you know, it's not the main topic of the book, obviously, but it's a part of her experience. And I do appreciate that Michelle includes that narrative in her story because even just that one girl in the book saying, well, if you're not Chinese and you're not Japanese, then what are you? And that question sticks with her, obviously, because she's like, well, what do you mean? What am I? Like,
yeah.
But you could tell she's already reckoning with that feeling, as she has mentioned kind of before, of being half American, being Korean American, and like having her mom be Korean and her dad being white, and trying to figure out where she fits in all of this. And that is a confusing place to be. And especially so in times of like extreme emotional, I think, moments like this, what she's going through with her mom. And then on top of that, the caregiver lady, Kay, comes and helps take care of her mom. And to see that, was she Korean too? That they were both?
Yeah, she was Korean. Yeah.
Yeah, and that like Michelle doesn't even feel close with her mom anymore because she's like, I'll never be Korean enough to love my mom the way she needs to be loved. And like, that's like it was such a heartbreaking, I think, thing that she's dealing with on top of all the stuff that she's already dealing with. Is like, she's trying to make her mom all her favorite Korean dishes, and she's trying to be like the perfect daughter to her mom in this time, and to feel like, even she, like, she doesn't ever feel enough in any of these spaces. And I think it just adds more complexity to the story. It's just very heartbreaking to know that, like, that's her experience and these are her feelings while she's just trying to survive and get by.
Yeah. I appreciate that about her story, is how real it is. And I think even when people think about you just going through grief, they don't think about all the random crap that gets piled on.
Right.
That you still have to deal with. You're still having to deal with life, and other shit can unfortunately still happen as a really shitty thing is happening. And I appreciate just kind of how honest she was about the different situations that kept arising and the different feelings she was having, because I think it's such a complex thing. And if you have an experience you don't know, you don't realize just how bad it can get. Even when it's already bad and you think, oh, nothing else bad can possibly happen. No, things can happen. And I appreciate that she was super open and honest about that and included that in her memoir.
Yeah. And another thing I think that she hits on is something, especially in this pre-grief time, especially when you're caregiving, is trying to get back to normal. And so in the next chapter, she talks about, you know, like feeling guilty for having to leave because she's, I don't know, is rock star like appropriate to say here? Like, she's a musician and...
Yeah, I mean, I heard one of her songs before, and I've actually used it on our TikTok for some of the posts, but it's a song that I've heard before that I didn't realize is her, and I actually really like the song. But I'm very bad at knowing people's name, like knowing their names, knowing who sings what. So I actually do like her song, like one of her songs that I've heard. So mm-hmm. I've heard more, but yeah, it seems, I don't know if she was as big at that time when she left her mom to go back on tour for a little bit, but I definitely think she's a pretty, at least if not, I think she's going to be a big star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I think this brings up such, I think, a question we all face at some point, especially when you're caregiving for somebody, of like, when do you start trying to go back to like a normal, or trying to focus on your future? Because, you know, I think with caregiving, you're so wrapped up in the present. You're so wrapped up in dealing with the here and now. And I even remember thinking caregiving with my dad of like, what if this is a very long time? Am I going to need to quit my job? Do I have to put my career on halt? Like, things that you don't really consider until you're in those spaces, and thinking like, well, my future is now changed. How do I still think about what is best for me in my future in a time when I need to give almost all my time to somebody who needs my support?
Yeah, I definitely experienced that. I mean, and because I experienced so much loss that my dad misses or my mom, and there were so many times that there's not really recovery between right. them. So it definitely changed what I want in a career, but also like the stability of staying in a career because of that. And it just changed so much what you think about, that it's really hard because you're just trying to make sure they get healthy, make sure another person doesn't pass away. Like right. you're thinking about all these different things that you don't, it's really hard to think about yourself, to even be like, okay, yeah. I need to eat properly. I need to go back to the gym. I need to also make sure that my body doesn't deteriorate trying to take care of someone. I need to figure out, when can I ask for help, or when do I need to ask for help? And not that I did all those things properly at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, those are things that you should be thinking about, because it's really hard. I mean, I remember I left my mom, and it was hard because this is the last time I saw her. Yeah. And it was because I was interviewing for another job. But my mom also wanted me to go, because I don't think she wanted me to see her like that anymore. But, and to give up more stuff. But it's like, that's so hard, because it's like, you don't, like, how do you make that choice? And how do you respect someone else's choice? And something that is really hard. And I know for her, like, thankfully her mom was still okay, but at least for a little bit longer. But it's just crazy, because how do you find that balance? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it's like, what is worth it? But then also, yeah, I don't know. It's a hard thing, because I'm glad I never saw my mom passed away. Mm-hmm. And that's a memory that I don't need. But it is a hard thing, because there's like pros and cons, you know, of yeah. being around for that. But yeah, I mean, those memories, and I think she talks about a little bit more in those chapters, so we'll touch on that. But yeah, there's so much that goes into to death and seeing people pass away, that it's crazy, and it sucks. These chapters brought up so many memories. I was like reading it, I was like, oh my god, wow, it's amazing. Like, what's going on?
And I agree, like, if you're not ready to read a book like this, it's heavy, because yeah. she's not shying away from her experience. She's going through all of it.
No.
But I also felt like, when I didn't read this immediately after my dad's passing. It was probably maybe a year or two afterwards, but it was also weirdly healing, because I remember the first time I read it, like, literally saying out loud, oh my god, like, somebody has felt the same thing I felt. And I didn't know, I know that's wild to say, I know that's like so, like, I don't know, conceited to say, but like, just to hear she had gone through something exactly similar to what I had gone through, it just feels a little less, I don't know, isolating, at least in my case, that's how it felt. But yeah, you're diving through a lot of her personal memories that I think a lot of people relate to in these yeah. cases.
And I think that is so much of it, because I think, yeah, it does feel so isolating. It does feel alone. And obviously there are unique elements to anyone's mm-hmm. experience, but so much, I feel like the pain and all that stuff that you feel, you really do feel like no one else has felt that. Yeah. No one has felt as low as I felt. No one has felt as sad, and all these different things. And people have, other people feel that sad. And it's, it's nice in a sense also, I think, gives you kind of perspective in a way too, because sometimes I think you can be, it can get too much where you're thinking like, the world sucks. This is the, you know, I have the worst life and everything. Yeah. You know, like sometimes you need to just also need perspective on that. But I think also sometimes you just need to feel seen and feel like someone gets what you feel like. Mm-hmm. So I think there's kind of those different sides of it. But I remember in chapter 10, her mom was in the hospital already. And something that we talked a lot about, and actually our episode, I think that's releasing Tuesday, this is going to be a Monday episode, is talking about her dad basically not being a good partner to her mom, in the sense he was not the one caretaking for her. He was not, like, she's at the hospital. He wasn't the one, like, I think she said that something about, like, her mom had sores in her lips and stuff from, like, the medication. And so when she needed help, I think she asked for, like, water or for something. And her daughter, Michelle, was the one that, like, gave her a cup to, like, I think, swish in her mouth and, like, spit out. Like, she was, like, doing the actual steps. But then her husband just be like, here. Like, without, like, just give the tube or just give whatever. Like, without actually helping her do it. And, like, when your mom, when you're like, dying of cancer and your body's weak, like, you need help with menial things. With just any little thing you need help with. So it's, like, removing the steps and just doing it for them. And her husband wasn't the right partner that did it, that was thoughtful enough. And at the time, it's like, how do you ask for that, you know? And I think something we talk about, where you really have to find the right partner. And things like, and I think sickness really makes you think about your partners differently, because, and value your partner differently. And I think it's so hard to really find a good partner and find, what do you actually need in a partner? I think that's hard in itself. But when you've experienced grief and experienced, like, family members passing away and being the caretaker, you realize how hard it is and just, like, what you really need in a partner. Like, I can't imagine being there and being like, oh, my husband cannot help me. He's not capable of helping me in a way that I need. Yeah. And that's even scarier. And I see people have, like, I've read stories of people that, like, get divorced and all these things because of that, you know, and it's scary. It's one of those hard things where it's, like, it's so hard because sometimes you just don't know how a person is, because someone can just react totally different when somebody gets sick. Yeah. And but it's always a good reminder of, like, what you need in a partner, how to choose them. And do you want to be in the hospital? Not that you knock on one, oh my God, that it was ends up in the hospital, but it's a huge thing of, like, you really need to be careful about, if you choose to even want a partner these days, but if you do get one, will they actually be there for you and helpful?
Yeah, I think, like, when you're reading this book, you keep hoping that the dad is going to step up and and kind of just, like, do something minimum. And I think even for Michelle, it's like, how can I be doing all this and I'm the kid and you're her husband? And, like, her mom even says that in the hospital, like, you shouldn't be the one sitting here with me. It should be my husband. And yet he just doesn't know how to take care of somebody. And I also like that they don't shy away from, like, when, you know, I don't know if she says it in this chapter or later on, but she says, you know, it wasn't supposed to be this parent. It was supposed to be the parent that was addicted to drugs and, you know, drinks and drives and just is not very careful with his health or his life. But it's the one that, you know, her mom, who was, like, very conscious about her health, very conscious about her life. And to see, you know, they even talk about how they had plans, like, what happens when your dad dies? Like, what are we going to do? To find out that's not what happened. It was her mom, and them trying to, like, figure that out. And clearly her dad thought the same thing, I think.
Yeah, he said that out loud. And it is crazy because my mom was definitely that too. She was so healthy. She didn't like using the microwave. She was always health conscious, like, green juice every day. Like, so many things. She was so health conscious, and she still got cancer and she still passed away. And it's one of those things where, yes, I think it's important to take care of your body. I do think it's important to work out and all those things. But I don't think you can let it rule your life, because everyone's like, oh, this and that. It's, you could do everything right and get cancer. And there's people that live off soda and they live till 90. It's like, you don't know. You just really don't know.
Smoking a pack a day to the last day.
Yeah. And it just, it feels like an unfair gamble because it's like, you could do everything right and it still doesn't matter. So I just, my philosophy is take care of yourself, but also like when you want cake or you want that brownie,
yeah,
go eat that freaking brownie because you don't know who's going to be selected in this weird game. So just live your life. Enjoy your life.
Well, I like it. I think it's this chapter when they go on that trip back to Korea and they're doing that medical emergency visit, like back because her health has taken a decline. And I love that she includes this because I just thought it was just so funny and just so cute that like they're flying back and the nurse looks away so her mom can have some champagne in first class. Like those are one of those things of like, should she be having champagne?
Yeah.
But at this point, we now know her days are limited. And like what like a treat and a luxury to experience that when you can. So
yeah,
I just thought, I love that little just insert of like the nurse looks away so her mom can have champagne. I was like, that's so cute.
Yeah, that was a nice one. Yeah, it's true. Like drink your champagne, honestly, in moderation, but
yeah. Yeah, and then I mean I think I don't know if this is as much as like a surprise or a plot twist to other people, but you know, Michelle's like, you know, my mom's not gonna see me get married, so might as well get married now. And I love that in 3 weeks they plan a wedding and it brings her mom like this joy to be a part of the planning, and you could tell like that's when her mom was really gonna like strive helping her with all that, and that she had already like picked out Michelle's ring at Costco. Yeah. And she's like, you need to wear this one, you need that one. I just thought that was like so cute, like it was something so nice, and I think relieving to know that like, she is about to pass and they decided to have like this celebratory event. And I thought it was funny, she was like, well, we can get a divorce after it's done. And her boyfriend's like, no, like this is
yeah. And I think for both of us, we've talked about just how weddings are going to be different. And that's also something that another, I feel like a crying moment, because it's, I think weddings now, just, I don't know what a future wedding would look like without the people, the main people. So, yeah. I mean, obviously besides like the husband, I guess he's also married anymore. But, you know, when I was sick, there was like not even, there was never anyone that really, that I would be like, oh, let's get married to even think that. But, and obviously in tomorrow's episode or Tuesday episode, you'll understand why, but the, but yeah, it's something where it's like, oh, it's, I'm glad that she got to do that. Yeah. And it's something that if you have lost people before your wedding, you realize, you know, how you don't look forward to that and how that's a really hard thing. So it's nice to see. And even I think her vows, in her vow section, it was something I think she talked about as well that we've talked about before, is she mentioned about sickness and health and love is an action. And we've talked about so much of what is really in sickness and health, and people just, you know, it's always in your vows. It's very stereotypical what you put in your vows, but do you mean it? Do you know what that means? Do you show up for the people that you love? Will you be there in sickness when they're, if their hair falls out, if they're frail, if, you know, you have to wipe their butt or something, you know, like literally things like that. Will you be there for that? And if you're not that type of person, because frankly, not everybody is, then maybe you don't even need to be a partner to somebody. Like maybe you should be single. You know, maybe you shouldn't try to partner with someone where that's a one-way street, and that happens so often, you know. And she, I like how real she was about that, and something that people need to consider more, because you say you love someone, but do you really?
Yeah.
How deeply do you love them, and how deeply do you care about them? I think that's so important, because nothing will test that as much as if they're sick and their health is declined, and everything you have to sacrifice so much. You know, but you have to care more about the love than what you sacrifice.
Right, yeah.
Because it's like, yes, you still have to think of yourself, and yes, you have to give up so much, and that's really hard, and you need to put a lot, your life trajectory changes completely. But when you love someone and you want them to be okay, even if they don't end up being okay, it's like, you still did everything you could, and you were there for them. because you like you want someone to be there for you in that case too. Yeah. So I think that's really the important part. And those are actions. Like she said, love is an action. It's you being there. It's you taking those steps. And it's not just being at the hospital, doing the bare minimum. That is not what it is. And like what she said her dad was doing for her mom was like the bare minimum. And just depending on everyone else to do the hard stuff. And that's not – that's not sickness and health. That's just, I feel like, surface level love.
Yeah. And I think this is a Buddhist proverb. I can't remember. But it's along the lines of like, whenever you do love something or someone, that's going to inherently bring pain regardless. Like with love comes pain. Because even if you're married to the most perfect person and they don't cause you any stress your whole life, you're going to have to deal with the grief of them dying anyways. And that's always going to inherently, unfortunately, just be intertwined. And so I think like along with this idea when she's getting married and she's thinking about her parents' marriage, that when you love someone, you're going to be willing to take on that pain too, because you can't have one without the other. I just finished A Little Life, like the world's most saddest book. And so much
sadder than this.
Yeah, it's definitely more traumatic. This is definitely about death and grief, but the other one is about trauma. But
Kendall, what are you? Where's your mind right listen, now?
Listen, okay.
Where is your mind space right now?
you look at the reviews and people are like, "Don't read this. So traumatic. So horrible." But I never saw in any reviews of like how beautiful the happy moments are too. And like you truly cannot have happy moments without sad moments existing. No, obviously not to the extreme of this book, but like, you know, in A Little Life, that's kind of what I took away was like a life can be filled with so much trauma and pain, but life can also be filled with so much happiness and love, and those coexist. You can't have one without the other.
Yeah. I definitely think that's something that, especially, I mean, people have so many different traumas and things that they deal with, but I definitely think with grief, that's something that is so relatable because there's so much sadness and there's so much of my life that's so hard. And, but I always have to remind myself, like, this is still my life. And I'm lucky to be living my life, and I need to be the one making sure that I create magical moments, that I still feel joy, that I still, that I don't close myself up, that I'm always welcome, you know, open to meet new people, that to new experiences. And it can be simple as just like, I've been playing volleyball on the weekends a lot and I've been organizing it. And it's been great because it's not only for me to make more friends and meet more people and spend time outside, but other people are making friends. Other people are connecting. And I think that's great because it's become this place where people can just connect. And even if it's not only just my connections, it's other people's, it's a thing that people like expect is going to happen a few times a month and people look forward to.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just things that like that can bring you joy that you can still really enjoy life. And I was in Truckee for a week and it's such a beautiful like lake town. And I woke up every morning to see the sunrise with Jameson, who's my dog. And it was so nice.
Executive producer.
Yeah. He's really leading everything here. And and yeah, it was just nice, you know, just like that peaceful moments in the morning and waking up and appreciating the sunrise and knowing how beautiful it was across the lake. And I sort of think like, as much as life feels hard sometimes, like these sunrises feel magical. They feel very peaceful. They feel very healing. And it's, you have to acknowledge those moments too, to not just let the sad moments rule your life. And I think that's really important. I'm not sure that I'll read that book or not that you mentioned, but we'll see. I'll end up on here too, but we'll see. I feel like
I would definitely heed warnings to anybody who does pick it up. It was a good book. I thought it was very beautifully written, but I don't know if I would read it again. It definitely is sad. But I will say, in this book, I'm crying during the sad moments. I'm crying when there's obviously like really heavy moments happening. And the other book, I was crying when really happy moments were happening, strangely enough. So that was something interesting I pinpointed to myself of like, oh, I'm not crying during the sad moments in the other book. I'm crying because like these are such beautiful, happy moments.
In which book?
In A Little Life. Where it's like,
oh, okay.
granted, I don't have like the same experiences as A Little Life, whereas like this one obviously aligns closer to our lives and our experiences. So to go through, to feel these like heavy emotions again during like very pivotal points of her mom's health, like definitely bring up a lot of stuff. And it's like, ooh, that is heavy. Yeah. And
a lot of, I think we're talking about how this book kind of broke down and brought up memories that like I don't even think about because it's all happening so fast that you're like, oh wow, these things did happen and these were really traumatic, but it's kind of a blur and you don't think about it. And this book really made you be like, okay, all this shit did happen. It was really hard. And I remember it was so sad because her mom's last word she says was pain. And that's like a horrible thing. And that made me think of like my sister's last words to me was that she loved me and like she kind of became lucid. And like, but I can't imagine if her last words were like pain. Like that's really hard. And
but she talked about the anger she has towards the doctors because she's like, they promised us this wouldn't happen. They promised us she wouldn't be in pain. And I think that's a similar thing of like feeling angry when these things are happening. Because I felt angry too, being like, I was promised other things. I was promised a different outcome from doctors and then having the worst thing happen. And you're like, what the hell?
When you have hope and or just you're expecting something and it doesn't happen, that's really hard. And I wasn't prepared for, like, she talks about the moments like when her dad, because she was at home, but her dad just said, like, it happened. Her mom passed away. And just like when you, if you're there or you get, I was there for my dad and my sister, but like for my mom, I got like the text because her sister-in-law was the one that was there because she was in another country. And I sort of think like that's like just numb, like this can't be happening again. And so when she said that, like that, getting that type of information is the worst information. Even if you're there, it's just, I mean, it's horrible. And I just can't even imagine. It just, you don't expect what that's going to make you feel because you don't know, but it's horrible, I'm sure. And you experienced that as well. And another thing that her mom talking about when she prepared her mom's body, like she put the clothes on her mom and her mom was already passed away. That is like, she talked about how no one prepares you for that. No one prepares you for seeing your mom or your loved one passed away. And just how hard it is and how just like freak, like it's just, it's a horrible experience.
Yeah.
And you can't prepare for it. And people don't talk about how horrible that is, which is why I've gone on rants about like funerals suck and viewing stuff. Yeah. It's like, do you really want to see that? You don't have to see them that way. Mm-hmm. Like I am saying publicly, I do not want to be viewed anymore. Yeah. I want to become like a tree pod, maybe some nice jewelry. I don't know, but I do not want to be in a viewing. I just don't think it's necessary because it's so weird. And especially having to like put her mom in clothes and just, just like at one point she said her mom's eyes popped open, which that, see, like I just pictured that happening and I was just like, I can't even imagine that feeling, because I think it's also like, oh my, it's like I feel like we're split second, you think like, oh, they're alive, you know, like it's just
right. Yeah,
I don't know if that's what she felt, but like I feel like that, you know, you kind of are just like in a sad place, and so you want to have anything to be positive, but oh my god, that reading that really gutted me. And thinking about that, and just like I remember I gave one of my dresses to my former sister to be cremated in, and like just thinking about that, like it's so freaking hard, like people don't talk about that. Like, it is just really hard. So, in reading that again, I was like, oh my god, that sucks so bad. And there's no preparation for that at all. And for people that are going through it, it's so hard. And people don't get that from the outside. Just that alone is so traumatic.
Yeah.
There's so much hard shit with just that alone. Seeing that image, and it doesn't just go away. It's like you see it once. It's like you have that image in your head now. It's like it's a memory that you don't want. So that's why I didn't go see my mom. I didn't go to her funeral where her body was there, and I'm happy with that because those memories I don't want. I don't want it. It's such a dark thing, and especially as a third death, like I didn't want it. And Yeah, it's so hard. I don't know what your thoughts on that, but I just remember thinking that was like gutting. I was like, oh, I'm crying right now.
Yeah, certainly not. I don't think I'd ever have the strength to do that. But I recognize like her, like the amount of care and consideration, like distinctly the line where she's like, I put on the pants so no one could tell how skinny her legs have got. And she's like, it doesn't matter anymore because like, who is she trying to impress? But the fact that she cared enough to want to make sure her mom went out looking good, because that was something her mom cared about, was, you know, a lot of her appearance. And, you know, not that my dad would have ever cared about any of that. We buried my dad in a Texas Longhorn t-shirt and jeans because that's just what he wore all the time. But to the consideration she put into making sure that she thought her mom would have approved of how she looked. And I think like I had this, I don't know if you've ever had this, but like after I was told that, I got a phone call from the doctor saying that like my dad had a heart attack and he had passed. I just had like this thought of like, no, this is a mistake. Like they made a mistake. Certainly this is just like a lapse. Like he's going to come back. And I had thought that like maybe they had the wrong guy because this was COVID. So I couldn't like, there was a lot of restrictions around kind of a lot of things, but I didn't see my dad until like I think the day before his actual funeral. And the whole time, I think for about 2 days, 3 days maybe, I was like, I think they have the wrong guy. I don't think they have my dad at all. I think they mixed it up and I'm going to go there and see somebody else. And this is all just going to be a big mistake. This is all just not, this isn't real because this wouldn't happen to me. This wouldn't happen to my dad. And it wasn't until like, you know, you have like a private viewing and it just like, it hit me in a weird way to see my dad, and this was very Catholic-y, but I think in her situation though, to be there right after her mom passes, to be dressing her body, she obviously does not have this thought process that I went through. Of like, they have the wrong guy, like this is just a big mistake, because she I think is coming very quickly into reality of like, I'm dressing my mom's dead body, and this is her. This, and I think like the line she says in the book is so well said of like, but this body hasn't been hers for a while now, and that line hit me hard.
Yeah, just that saying it like you feel that of it's crazy because they look nothing like themselves when sickness takes over, and it is crazy what illnesses can do to someone's body.
Yeah,
it could just destroy them. And you know, I feel for you with having that last hope that like it's not my dad and it's someone else. And it's really like you need to have hope.
Yeah.
And you need to try to have hope in any situation. And it's really hard because you're continually trying to be optimistic in a time that just is shitty.
Yeah.
And it's like you're just constantly like, no, it actually is as bad as you think, if not worse. And so I think that's what's hard about it. And I can't even imagine, like, she dressed her mom. I can't even.
Yeah, I wouldn't have that strength in me to do that.
Props to her. I cannot do that. That is crazy. And I think after mom passed away, when they were, like, waiting for the ambulance and stuff, she went to an orchard, which she said that, like, it was something that she did with her dad. So felt very, like, okay, this is not a place for me and my mom. And so she went there, and it was like the world was still going on. You know, it was a happy time. It was an apple orchard. It was fall. Yeah. And she was saying it doesn't feel like a day that someone has died. And I get that feeling so much. We've talked about it, where you lose someone so important, and then you go into the world, and it's like it's still going. Everyone is still just living their life. And granted, you don't know the average person he walked by. They could have also just lost someone. You don't know.
Yeah.
But it just feels like, wow, my life has just gone to shit and everything's just going on like normal. People are just living. Yeah. And I think that's such a isolating and weird feeling where I feel like it's like almost in movies where you just hear like muffled noise.
Yeah.
And you're just walking and like everything's in like speeding by and you're just kind of slow-mo walking. I feel like that is a really great representation of what it feels like to kind of re-enter the world after you've lost someone, where it's like you feel so disconnected. You feel it's weird. And you're like, do people just know what I went through? Like, do you know? Can you read my face that I'm like, you know, the sad person right now? And she talks about that in, you know, when she went to the orchard, and it's something so relatable. I don't know if how you I know we've spoken before, but kind of what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I'm glad she included that. I think, like, one, that's such a private and intimate memory that she includes in the book. And I'm glad she includes it because I have thought about the, you know, how we were joking in the previous episode, like, you crying in Seafood City and, like, me crying in, like, the pizza aisle at Walmart and thinking, like, nobody knows, like, what I'm going through. And it's weird just to be passing people and they're just wrapped up in their day to day. And, like, someone who had just lost somebody, like, the day of, and think that how can we be so distracted by all these little things?
Yeah.
And, you know, to think that somebody has died today. I think she says, like, how, what a beautiful day it was. I felt that too. I felt that the day my dad passed, and I was like angry that it was a beautiful day, because I was like, it should be storming. It should be raining. It should, like, the world should just be falling apart, like the way I felt. And looking back though, I am glad it was a beautiful day, because that's just like my dad's demeanor and personality was very just bright and beautiful like that. But yeah, very strong choice of her too, to go to the apple orchard. I would have been wobbling on the couch. So good for her for, like, trying to actually, like, get out and have some sort of, like, normalcy in all of this, because it is not a normal day in your life when you lose somebody. It is a very weird feeling, and it's a very weird day. And but
horrible.
But, you know, if it helped her, way to go. Because I would have just been, I think that's what I did after my dad dies. I just laid on my bed for days crying, being like, how do I even get up? How do I even move on?
Yeah. I don't remember exactly what the weather was. I feel like for my sister and my mom, like, no, I remember it was a nice day when my dad passed away, because I was in the Philippines and it was really hot, but that created other issues. But I just remember being at the crematorium, and I was, like, walking outside, like, pretending I was on a balance beam, and just be like, is this my life? Like, it had already been hard because I'd been in the hospital and, you know, all these different things, already done, like, 3.5 months in the hospital. But I was like, is this really my life? Like, all these hard things are happening. And that was just the start, because then, you know, he was the only one that had passed away at the time. So my mom and my sister still hadn't passed away. But everything, like, this is really my life. Like, I'm in the dead dad's club.
Yeah,
I've actually lost someone. Like, this is actually happening. This is crazy. And wow, that was, like, just the start of everything. But I remember thinking, like, this feels weird. Like, I'm walking in a world where my dad has passed away and everything has changed. And that was not everything that changed. But it is a weird feeling. And we were not in – yeah, I mean, there was things going on, but it wasn't, like, a happy – right. space of, like, an apple orchard. And I wonder what she feels about apple orchards now. I definitely love the apple orchard feeling and kind of fall activities, but I wonder what she feels like if she goes to that, and if it brings any weird memories or feelings.
Yeah, and I think, like, there's a line she says that I don't know if, like, this is such a good pull quote, but she's like, I now know a world where there's people that know pain and there's people that don't know pain. And I think a lot of people feel that when they go through loss of, like, I'm now in this weird group of people. Yeah, in this grief club that you have is very exclusive, and you actually have to, like, go through a lot to enter this grief club. And then there, you look around and there's people that never have experienced that. And in ways you're like, I wish you could understand this pain so you could know what is happening. But in other ways, it's like, I also want to shield people from ever having to know what that pain feels like.
Yeah, it's one of the things, like, you want them to relate, but same, I'm like, I don't want you to relate at all. Like, I don't want you to understand what it feels like, especially not, like, this much death to deal with.
Yeah. And is it this chapter or is it the next chapter where she talks about the art class teacher and the teapot?
I don't know if it was this chapter, but she does mention it within these chapters that I remember reading that in the section.
Yeah, and just like I thought it was just such a beautiful little thing of like learning something about her mom after she thought she knew everything about her mom, to find out there was all these little things that she's still learning about her after she's gone. There's a lot of feelings obviously in the post lost period where she and her dad are trying to reckon with all of this and kind of all these people in her mom's life that feel like they failed because they didn't care enough or didn't try as hard to help her overcome, to beat the cancer that she had. Because you hear all the time these success stories of people beating cancer and it's such a celebration. And she feels like, well, we must have not tried hard enough to save her. And there is that guilt. I think a lot of people feel that guilt after they lose somebody close of like, could I have done something more? Could I have helped? Could I have been better to make this go away? And I think a lot of people also go in this moment of like, I should have prayed more. I should have been a better person because then I wouldn't have lost this person. And I like that she kind of inputs like the ladies coming to her house and like her, she's like, my mom was not a Christian. And then these ladies kind of was like, you need to be a Christian before you die. And that, she's like, even though Michelle herself is like not Christian, that they still had like a very beautiful ceremony on behalf of her mom, because she's like, her mom would have cared more about the social graces of the whole thing rather than like the actual spiritual side of things. She was like, there's something about my mom that thought she was like, I don't know how she said it, but like she could stand up to God or something like that, just to show how strong her mom was. Yeah. And I just thought that was so funny.
Yeah, I definitely the parts about feeling like a failure because other people beat cancer. And it's one of those weird things where it's like you hear so many success stories, even very rare stories that it happens. And for sure, I was like, my mom was the last person to pass away. And it's like, there's no way that like in this world order of things that happen, it'd be like my dad passed away, my sister passed away, and then my mom. Like, there's no way that that's fair. There's no way that that would happen. Yeah. And I think it's really hard because it's like, in what world is that okay? How can we not be one of those success stories? I was really like, this is going to get better. It's just a challenge that we're going to get through. And it is really hard because some people, they get over it. Some people, they don't. And it's like, you don't know the cards that you're dealt with, and it's really crazy. And I mean, I even follow this one person on TikTok. I think her name's Brooke, and she has ALS. And I've been following her for even I think maybe a year, maybe 6 months, and I've even seen the progression of the disease on her. And it's like, she was such a, from watching her, like, and she still has like that great personality, but you know, she seemed like such a fun person before she, you know, before she got diagnosed, before she started having, you know, confined to a wheelchair and lost use of her legs. But it's just crazy because you just like, you don't know. And I think there was it was nothing like in our family, and you just like don't know what cards you're going to be dealt with and how people can overcome what or not. And it's just crazy to see that. And even just from watching her, I'm always inspired by like her positivity through that all. But it is crazy because you just don't know what life, like the world is going to deal with. And I mean, she even said like she got a death sentence at like 30. She was like 30 something. So it's like crazy that you go to the doctor and they tell you you're going to die within a certain amount of time. Yeah. And that's so crazy. And cancer is one of the things where you just don't know whatever. And even just with different health things, like your dad had diabetes, my dad had diabetes. Some people, they're totally fine. I think diabetes type 2, you could go into remission from diabetes. Type 1, you cannot, because you're born with it. But you know, there's certain things that you can do that you may think like maybe something will change or you'll be dealt a better card, but you just don't know. Yeah. And that's just life where you don't know what's going to happen. That's just the fun part.
Trying to end this on a happy note. That's the fun part.
You really have to go out of your way to bring back the fun and joy when you unfairly get dealt cards that suck so much from your life. And that's what's really hard, is you have to really work really hard to still have a good life. You can, but it's life is really like this instead of just like a one uphill thing. So those are some tough chapters. You know, I think for the next, we're not even done with this book, which I'm like, what else do you have to say? You already, she already passed away. We already did all this stuff. So I'm like, what else are you going to do? But I think for the next book, we need to have, it doesn't have to be happy, but I think, or happy alone. I think I know that there are books that exist that are maybe like there's romance in the grief story. Like grief is an element and a strong element, but it's not the only element.
Right. Yeah.
I think we need to mix it in with something like that.
I'd love that.
To bring some fun, because
I honestly need to read more romance.
To get out of your box, because you're reading another sad book. So I need to find
dramatic books. Okay.
The next choice is mine, and I think I'm gonna do some research to find the right book, and also just to help Kendall get out of sad book, right? Because she's reading two sad books at once. I like the other book I'm reading is like a fairy romance book or something. I don't even know. I forgot what it is. Like in Ireland. I don't know. I just started reading it, but I am definitely like happy-ish book, happy book with like a sad book. You're like sad and sadder.
Sad and sadder. So then the sad one doesn't seem so sad.
Yes, life, you need perspective, but that much perspective at once, I don't know.
I'm unhinged in my reading choices. Yeah.
You went dark right after. But who knows? Everyone's healing journey is different. I don't know.
There's a lot of grief in Little Life, but we are not going to be reading a Little Life. One, because it's so long. I was going to say, do I have it here? It's a hefty book.
We're going to be doing that one for 2 years. 2 years.
Yeah. We would have to have a lot of stops too, because every chapter is like a heavy chapter.
Oh, God. No, it's going to have to be some like romance with sadness.
Yeah.
Have you read A Beach Read?
I have, I think. Yeah.
When it Emily Henry
came out. Did it come out last year?
It came out a while ago.
Okay. I do like Emily Henry. I do like her a lot.
I remember I looked it up and I thought that she had lost someone, but she hadn't. It was a different Emily Henry. I don't think she's actually experienced loss. And I was really surprised, because the way that she writes about it feels real. Like feels you connect with a lot of the emotions. But yeah, I'm going to pick one where there is like some happy romance elements, because I think it's nice to be whimsical as well as sad. Yeah,
it is. It is. And it's nice to have other topics to think about.
Yeah, because this one, especially these chapters, I'm like, what is in store for 16 and beyond? Because damn, this really like brought me through a roller coaster. So yeah, I mean, this is a great book, but also know where you are in your grief if you're ready to read it. I haven't lost any, God, knock on whatever, but like going to be 7 years soon of losing my mom. And this felt like, wow.
Brought it all back.
Brought me right back in. And wow, that was a deep dive.
Well, and I wonder also, because I thought about you a lot while reading this and thinking, you know, since it is a mom in the story and you had lost your mom, like how much more connection and relation that you might have versus like it was my dad, which is already a very separate character and a very separate figure in your life. But I thought about you a lot in this book, and I was like, man, I hope this isn't too intense.
It was intense. I have some
separation a little bit, you know?
I mean, yes, but I also think, you know, it's similarities, even if it wasn't the exact person that you lost. But, you know, I lost my dad, you know, take a pick. It's one of those weird things where I relate to too many things that I don't want to relate to. Like, oh, you experienced that? I experienced that too. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where... It's just like, it'd be nice if I didn't relate to so much shit, It'd be nice, but
one thing I don't relate to.
I don't want to relate to everything. Damn.
Yeah.
But so anyway, we're gonna go. Let's see what other chapters. So there's how many chapters left? So I think we'll probably finish
the 20.
Probably finish it, because I can't imagine there's there's not that much left chapters.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, 20 is the last one. So it was 16 through 20. So only 4 more chapters. So that's what our next Monday episode is going to be about. Hopefully there's less heaviness in that one. We'll see. I can't imagine. But that'll be the next episode. But yeah, if you guys have read this book, please share your thoughts, because this was intense.
Yes,
for sure. I would like to hear other people relate. If you lost someone that isn't your mom, if you lost someone, you know, someone else, how it related. Because as Kendall said, she lost her dad. Still so many things she related to. I've lost both my parents, so, and my sister. So there's a lot of things that I, even like that maybe didn't happen to my mom, I didn't have my dad or my sister that I related to. So definitely a lot of tears in this. But our next episode will be posted on Monday. Our episode tomorrow will be about dating and grief. It's a very, I would say, juicy topic. And like I said, learn from me in that episode, please. But follow us on TikTok, Instagram, on YouTube, Two Girls with Grief Pod. And we'd love to hear from you and share your thoughts at email. Our email is twogirlswithgrief@gmail.com. Please share and listen to our podcast episodes every Tuesday. And every Monday, we're releasing a book club episode. So,
yeah, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you. And hope you didn't cry like we cried. And this is a longer one. These are some meaty chapters. So,
yeah,
this is a longer episode than expected. But yeah, there's a lot for this.
Next week.
Yep. See you next week.